Welcome to the Women in Business radio show with Sian Murphy, connecting women in business around the globe.
Hello and welcome into the Women in Business radio show studio. I'm Sian Murphy and for the first time in quite a long time...
Hey, I'm back. Adele, I'm here.
So one of my lovely co-hosts, Adele Martin, is back into the studio. She's been... Have you been having a bit of a challenging time, haven't you?
I have. I've been for a few weeks.
We'll come to that in a moment. Let's introduce who else we've got in the studio. We have with us Natalie Banks, who is the owner of the private care company, which is Dignity Home Care. Welcome to the studio, Natalie.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And also in the studio, we have Julia Crawford of People Pillar. So that is she is an HR expert. She's the owner of an HR company. She's going to be taking part in the discussion today. She is also one of our special guests on another show. So lots and lots and lots going on. We're going to have a very lively discussion. Not quite sure what on. We think it's going to be overcoming misconceptions.
Misconceptions.
I'm having trouble with my words today. Yeah, misunderstandings. misunderstandings about your business and perhaps how you can overcome those. So I think we need to start with Adele. Wake up.
No, I'm fitting. What are you doing?
Thank you.
I'm multitasking. I took the banana out.
Did you? I did. And we're back in the room. Okay. You better tell us. We need to get this over and done with. We'll never hear the last of it. What have you been doing over the last few weeks or so when you have not been in the studio?
I asked you for a sabbatical, didn't I? To take some time out because I had some bits and pieces.
I threw a few things around, didn't I? Yeah, I had a bit of a teddy tantrum.
I will come back, but I just need a bit of a sabbatical to get some things done. So, what have I done? I have managed to buy a new property, which was no mean feat. I also stepped on the bodybuilding with my pro debut in the British Championships there as well, and I managed to get 9 women to sign up to climb Snowdon in June for charity, and also got those amazing women at a photo shoot a week after. So all of that was on the plan, but all of it came together in the same week. So I got on stage, did a photo shoot, got the keys to my new property, and did it all. Always winning. I did, yeah. Oh, and I also got a finalist at the Digital Women Awards as well. And I won at Women in Business. I got Women's Champion. So, yeah, lots going on.
Very, very busy. Meanwhile, me, just in the studio.
As you know, you have been with me for most of that planning. It's been a planning, to say the least. But we got there. Don't get me wrong. There's been some ups and downs, but I finally landed and did everything. So now I'm taking a year to build my body even stronger, and I'll be coming back out next season. I'm moving up a level and working on the business as well. So yeah, for me, the next sort of 9-10 months is building a stronger body and a stronger business. So yeah.
So as usual, Adele is involved with the Women in Business Big Show, which is on the 10th of August 2023. And Adele is one of our fantastic sponsors. Thank you so much for sponsoring Adele. That makes really just a big difference. And you're also going to be running a little sort of special section, aren't you?
I am. So I'm going to be running the Fab Over 50 section to prove that you can be Fab Over 50, because I've done all of that, and guess what? Oh, I am over 50. I feel a lot more
than
that.
I can beat that.
I know you had a little birthday, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Sabbatical. I didn't keep it quiet because it was a problem. I just kept it quiet because I'm not one of those people who goes out and has happy birthday sung at her in restaurants. However, I did. By the time my birthday arrived on the Monday, I'd been very quietly eating and drinking myself into a stupor. So it's not that I didn't enjoy myself.
So you're we're both very fab over 50. And what we want to do in that section is bring all the business exhibitors together that really focus on that age group. And, you know, we are a rising population in female startups and entrepreneurs. Mm. We start to look at the data, and we're also, when we get to that age and set up a business, we're also far more successful. So for me, it's bringing everything into one place to show that we are fab over 50, and I'll be doing my speaking and spending time with the exhibitors over there, and that's new for this year, so it's definitely a different vibe this year for the show.
Yeah, yes it is, and in fact we've got a completely different layout. So for one thing, I'm running the cafe and refreshments. I will be getting help. It won't just be me. Yeah. But we're going to be running the cafe ourselves. So Cafe in the Calm will be taking part. There'll be a sort of a relaxation, a space where you can actually chill and relax, and that'll be quite nice. So, but because we're doing it, because I'm organising the coffee is going to be really good.
Excellent.
So we've got really good coffee, tea. We're going to have spaces where you can sit down and write in your journal and just connect with what's been going on. So it is a bit of a different feel. And we've put all of the speakers together in one place. They're all like corralled together. And Adele is going to be the herder.
I'm going to get, God help me.
Chief herder. Yeah. Okay. I've lost where we are now. We've done that, haven't we?
And
we've
got Natalie exhibiting as well.
We have Natalie exhibiting, and I think it's probably time to introduce Natalie and find out a little bit about what Natalie does. So Natalie Banks, welcome to the show.
Hello.
And you're the founder of Dignity Home Care. Tell us a little bit about what Dignity Home Care does and how and your journey, you know, your story of how you got to setting up the company.
So Dignity Home Care is a domiciliary care for those wanting to remain in home rather than going into a residential home. So we provide the carers to obviously provide that personal care or companionship service to them. The reason why we kind of set up is because I've always worked in care. I've done it for over 16 years. I've worked in residential homes, nursing homes and within the community. And I just had enough basically of working for someone else, and I wanted to deliver the right care to all of my clients how they should obviously have the care delivered to. I work to a very high standard and I don't expect anything less from anyone who I take on. But the whole journey of it really was my partner. He was the one that inspired me to obviously set this company up. I would never have done it without him. I do lack a lot of confidence in that sense. Although I'm very good at my job, he was the one that gave me a push and said, "No, come on, you can do this." And I left my job and went all guns blazing, and that was it. Put everything in, and just set it up.
Okay, so I'm not sure whether you are lacking in confidence. Actually, I think that probably took quite a lot of guts. And you know, perhaps you need to have a little bit of a reframe there as to whether you really are, you know?
Yeah, my partner does say, you know what you're talking about, Natalie, you just need to believe in yourself a little bit more. And I think that's just all it all rolls down to, really, is I need to believe in myself.
So tell me, what is domiciliary care? I'm sure if we sort of sit here, we'd have a basic idea of what it is, but I also think that there's probably bits of it that we'd miss out. So what is providing that care? What sort of care do you provide, and who do you provide it to?
So what happens if someone was to ring us up because they've had a referral to say that they now need to have some level of support within their homes because they may be a danger to themselves, or they physically cannot get themselves out of bed, but like I said, they don't want to go into a home, we would then go out and do a assessment with the clients, explain everything as to what we have to deliver. With the assessments, we will go through absolutely everything with the client. Any health conditions we need to know, we have to do risk assessments on them, we have to then go away, write everything up to get the care plan in place, make sure everything's all kosher before we deliver the care. I say a lot of people, I think, don't understand the care side of things when you're putting in the word domiciliary, because not a lot of people understand what that domiciliary means. But basically we are just a care provider.
Someone's fine. No, that's okay. All sorts of things happen here, including me falling off the chair. We Cameron, when you say just a care provider,
provider.
It's a little bit more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that kind of you hear amongst conversations when you're walking around, not obviously directed to me, but you do hear it from a lot of people, and it's old carers. All they do is make a cup of tea. It's an easy job. it's not all about making a cup of tea. That's not that at all. We're not just providing care to people. We are there mentally for that person as well. So I know I need to take time out for ourselves, and it's really hard for us carers to take time out for ourselves, because not only are we dealing with maybe some stress at home and home life, we're then going to calls and then listening to their problems. We have people obviously that we deal with that do have dementia, which is challenging in itself, but I do like a challenge, and I do like my clients that can play up. I must admit I am one of them that really do like them. But yeah, so it's not just all about making a cup of tea. It's being there for that person as well, being that companionship, being that extended family member as such. I know obviously a lot of people don't like the family word being in the business, but I'd say it's more for the clients in our sense. They become an extended part of the Dignity Home Care family.
You've almost got sort of two clients as well, haven't you? Because potentially you've got the client that you're actually going and offering the support to.
Yep.
So you're going into their home or their space, and you're providing care to that individual. But there's also potentially the other client, or the person that's organised this is a member of their family.
Yeah.
Isn't it? How do you balance that, the wishes of both of them? Because I can see you sort of ending up in a situation where you've got a member of the family who may actually be paying you, who wants X, you know, certain things done, and then you've got the person that you're actually caring for, who may want something entirely different. They may not want to go out for a walk. They may not want that for their dinner. They may not want any dinner at all, and they may not want to do whatever it is that's sort of being directed. How do you balance, how do you deal with those two conflicting things?
Well, like I said, we have to do the assessments. So when we do the assessments, it's always the client that's going to be receiving the care along with the family member present as well. So we just have a nice conversation. We do. It's very, very relaxed. And I hear the voice from the client, and I'm also hearing the voices from their family members. And we kind of try to come to a mutual agreement. But you tend to find, I've had a lot of family members that have said, oh, they need to have this, but they may struggle because they don't like people doing this, or they don't like people doing that. But then when we're actually going in and delivering the care, I think it's maybe because psychologically they're seeing you in a uniform, they then feel more relaxed, I'll say, and more accepting to then have that.
They can put people in the right boxes.
Yeah. And they do it without even realising. It's like I say to some family members when they say they're not going to let you do this. For an example, I say bathing. If they struggle to have a bath, they're not going to let you do that, because that's just what they won't let us do it. So they're not going to let you do that. And what I tried to turn it around to make them understand a little bit more is, if you're in pain, and just say your partner's trying to help you and you're pushing them away and saying, no, leave me, I'm fine, just leave me alone. If you was then going to hospital, you would then straight away immediately accept that help, because you know mentally in your head that that person is there, they've got that uniform on, they're there to help you. And that's the same when it comes to delivering care to clients within the homes. The family members may think that they're not going to accept that, but as soon as you go in and you've got that uniform on and you're very confident at what you're doing, they then are okay to accept that help.
That's a really that's a really important point, isn't it? That you have on the right, that you've put the uniform on, and so straight away everybody, including you and the family members and the person who's receiving the care, know exactly what's going on and who fits into what slot. So pigeonhole, I suppose, which we tend not to do, or we tend to not like doing. But in this particular case, it's actually critical, isn't it? Because it's quite a visual cue as well.
Yeah.
So as soon as the person who you're caring for, they may not be able to understand or comprehend an awful lot of stuff, but they can probably recognise a uniform. And so there's that continuity, and straight away they know who you are.
Yeah. We had one lady, and I know her son would be more than happy for me to talk about her, because obviously, unfortunately, she's no longer with us. And yes, she was exactly the same. She had dementia, but she associated us with the uniform. As soon as she see us in a uniform, she knew we was there to help. But if I was to go in wearing normal clothing like I am today, she wouldn't let me nowhere near her because she knows I'm not the person there to help because I haven't got that uniform on.
I actually want to bring Julia in on this because I think this role identification is really quite important. And I'm thinking, you know, with what you do with HR, that actually putting people into these little pigeonholes when you're having perhaps awkward discussions is once again something, is a tool that you can use.
Yeah, definitely. I hadn't thought about it like that, but actually it's a really important point,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It hadn't occurred to me either. Mm. And so I'm guessing that in what you do or how you help your clients, that sort of what you're doing when you go in, if you're leading the disciplinary or you're leading whatever it is that's happening, you've sort of put on a different uniform, yeah, haven't you?
Definitely.
So you've put on a uniform so that when you're in that room and you're dealing with all of the parties that are involved, they know where you sit.
Yeah.
And by setting all of those expectations, by setting those roles and setting those boundaries, it makes life an awful lot easier, doesn't it?
Definitely. And it's about setting the scene before you go into it, so that everyone's clear about what your role is and what you're there to do, but probably more importantly, what you're not there to do. You know, typically, you know, from an HR point of view, it's not there to lead a disciplinary. That's for the manager or the chair of the disciplinary to do that. We're there to support and advise or take notes. And it needs that clear distinction because it can get quite muddied otherwise.
Mm. It's really important. Adele, is this something that you do with when you're working with clients, because you also sort of have a uniform, don't you? You have something that you put with when you're going into the gym,
yeah,
and you're working one-to-one with a client, you have something that you put on,
yeah,
that identifies you as, I don't know, what do we, the person in charge. So
yeah, absolutely, you're absolutely right. I have an outfit for whatever all I'm doing. So yeah, so when I go into the gym or into a space where I'm coaching, I will wear a certain sweatshirt so anyone can easily identify me. Absolutely, yeah, I do. And not only can then people identify with me and the client knows I mean business, I also know I mean business as well. So when I put an outfit on, that gets me into that world, because I have multiple roles that I'm doing. I have a certain outfit and a certain pair of trainers to match the moment.
It's really true, actually, that particularly when clients are having to have difficult conversations or do something like a disciplinary, actually it's about and they're not comfortable with it, it's right, okay, you now need to step into this role and almost physically step into this role. I quite often tell, you know, you've got to put your big girl pants on and do this. It's about moving away from you as a manager to you as the person who's leading this sort of, and it's hard.
It could be as simple as, you know, normally you're quite casual around the office, so you're dealing with everybody, you're chatty, it's friendly. I think no matter which way you look at it, a disciplinary is not going to be a chummy pally meeting, no, is it? So would it be a case of, okay, that's how you normally dress. For this, you're going to put a suit on, and you're going to make that straight away. There's going to be a distinction between, this is me, chummy pally, we're getting stuff done in the office, and we're making coffee. And actually, this is now a different situation, and I'm in a different, I'm in this role, I'm in boss mode.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a suit, but it's that,
yeah,
it's how you present yourself.
Yeah, I'll let you into a secret. So I wear different Chanel perfumes. But when number five is on, I'd walk into the office and go, oh God, the Chanel number five's on. And that meant I had to deliver some, either, don't get me wrong, I had to deliver a message in the boardroom, yep, or something. But if they smelt Chanel number five, they know today meant business. But for me, that's psychologically, yep, how I got into the moment.
Yeah.
Mm. Hmm. I think we can apply that across really so much of what we do, is making sure that we've got the right uniform on, even if we don't want to call it a uniform.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same for me. When I go out to do assessments, obviously, I have to dress very smartly because I'm representing my company.
Mm.
But when I go to deliver the calls, I make them aware I will not be in this clothing.
You're not wearing, suited and booted with a pair of stilettos on, clip-clopping across the floor.
Yeah, that's a big no-no. Very unsafe. I do make them aware that obviously this is not how I'll be. I will be in a tunic. But it will get to the stage where I won't be delivering the calls myself. I will then obviously have carers. I've got carers on standby that are qualified in the job Once again, obviously, like we were saying earlier, friends of mine that I've worked with, they know that there's a line, they know how I work, they know that I, as one person says, I'm very firm but very fair. So they know if I've got something to pull them up against, they will obviously listen. They know that's how I work. But yes, so it will get to the stage where I will no longer be delivering care, which I'm going to find very, very hard. Mm. Because I've done that, like I said, for over 16 years. Mm. So putting yourself away from that position is going to be a little bit difficult. But I do have to check in with all the clients. Every 6 months I have to check in just to make sure everything's going okay. Every year we have to obviously have a meeting with a family member. So I'm always going to be a part of the family members and my clients. But I think I'm just going to be that kind of different to every other care company that's out there, because I'd like to speak to my clients face to face. I like to still visit them. I do. So I will be doing that probably more than I need to when I get to that stage. But yes, and I have to make obviously all my clients aware, because they get so used to me then going in to deliver the calls. Mm. They then panic and think, oh, what's going to happen when Natalie's not delivering the care? Am I going to get on with the next carer?
So it could be that you have like a transition period. Yes.
So what I tell everyone that comes on board is I wouldn't just throw a new carer into them. I would not do that. It's not fair on the carer, and it's definitely not fair on the client. So what would happen is that carer, although I know they're qualified and I know, obviously, I know that person, they have to shadow myself for the first 2 weeks within the call. Because like I said, I have a very high expectation, and I don't expect anything less, so I want them to work how I work. They will shadow me for the first 2 weeks. If I feel that they're competent enough, then they then go on their own. But before they can do any of form of care to anyone, they have to do the mandatory training, which obviously is your basics, your first aid, your movement handling, your health and safety and your communication, etc., etc. They have to pass all of them. If they don't, they can't deliver the care.
I know.
That's really interesting. So there's a lot of women, again, like myself, where you are the business and you are the brand.
Yeah.
And I talk about moving through three layers. So there's me, so it's just you. And then you'll have we, which might be you, an assistant, and some people. And then there's the, which is where you start to bring on carers, or I bring on other PTs. Mm. Then all of a sudden, you move from management to leadership. And that's a whole different skill, because sometimes you get to a point, because you want ambition and growth for your business. And then realistically, am I going to speak to every client? The answer is no. Okay. Mm. So how do I ensure that my team have my brand and my values? So it's a real shift. Yep. And some women go, do you know what? I don't want that. I want to stay. And I say, well, okay, then there could be limiting factors on your business growth. So it's a real shift from management to leadership. And there's a lot of women that go through this. Actually, I want to stay close to my clients. Okay. Then think about expansion. But if you do, and I find that a real conversation. So I'm talking to a few friends and other clients about this at the moment, and myself. So yeah. I really like that approach. It's a different type of view.
I think it's a real challenge, and I think you have to decide where you're going to set those boundaries. So I realised sort of quite some time ago that if I insist on speaking to everybody before they either come on the radio show or exhibit at one of my events, that is actually going to become a limiting factor, because I'm a crushing introvert for one thing, and it takes me quite a lot of energy to sort of hide that fact sometimes. But it's also a decision that I made. So I think you need to look at like what is a critical control point. And for me, you know, people say, oh, what you've got has got such a lovely energy. And I think, okay, how do I make that happen? Well, actually, that happens because of a number of factors. And I think you need to decide, this is actually critical. We can't move away from this. And I think it was, I never know if it's Oprah or Oprah, who still speaks, or she was at the time that I read this, still speaks to everybody that is coming on to her show, or that she's interviewing, or that she's doing. That was because it's actually her brand. Mm. So, you know, if you're sponsoring and you're doing a lot with the Women in Business Big Show, there are lots of other people there. The thing is, everybody who walks in through that door, everybody who exhibits, and everybody who comes and visits, every single person in there represents me as well as themselves.
I do. Yeah.
And you only want some miserable
sponsor.
person. But you only do it, you only need that sort of person. To be, it can suddenly, that can affect somebody, everybody's perception of it.
Absolutely.
And so I think you do need to, all right, how much is this going to restrict my growth? But also, what impact is it going to have on my business and how people see things? And what is there a compromise here?
Absolutely.
And I think that's probably across the board. I think it's probably exactly the same for you as well, Julia, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, at the moment, it's again that tipping point of, well, will my clients want to work with anyone else? When this is when I was started working with associates, and actually, it's about just setting those expectations that I would typically always do the first introduction with them and do the proposals to do that, building that initial relationship, but make it really clear it might not be me that actually provides the support, but I'm still there and you'll still see me, but it might not be, you know, you might talk to Siobhan or whoever it is on a day-to-day basis. And actually most of them are like, okay, that's fine. Because I think I've started to build that relationship and they trust me that I've got that in place. And it is really important. It's so important. And actually you can't, you know, the people who work for you are completely representing your business and your brand. And need to match your values and how you operate. And so it's so important.
I think it is a personal decision though, isn't it? Yeah, I think it's something that we have to make that decision as business women as to where that line stops. Yeah. Because I could see, you know, if you had, you know, if is it feasible, say you had 1,000 clients, is it really feasible for you to speak to every single one of them before you take them on board?
No.
Probably not. On the other hand, she said, I'm just thinking this through, hang on. On the other hand, one client doesn't affect another client, does it?
No.
Whereas for me, it's not about me, obviously, it's my radio show, I can talk about me. Whereas I'm just sort of thinking it through. So for somebody like me, one client actually does affect another client. If you're all together in a room, I mean, if you two, for instance, we've got two people here on the same show, if you were like effing fisticuffs, if there wasn't a common place, if there wasn't a common discussion, you know, or if Natalie, if you were glaring at Julia, now, or me, now we are affecting each other. And when you go into one of the events, somebody who's not being very nice or has a horrible energy or is going around moaning to other people actually will affect the experience of everybody on that day.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's all sorts of things to think about, aren't there? Yes, okay. I've totally lost where we are now. I've been rattling on. I know what I was going to talk about. Caring for the carer. One of the things that you said was about how, you know, Natalie, you go into, you're caring for somebody, that can be quite a challenging environment, I guess, physically and mentally. Yep. There may be things that you need to look after yourself about. So, Julia, for yourself, either you or a member of your team could be dealing with in a disciplinary. Somebody could be losing their job. It may well be that they have a mortgage, that they have children. It could be a terribly distressing situation. But the business owner, you know, still they need to run a business. They can't go downhill, can they, with everything else? And sort of now everybody's out of a job and everybody's out of business. But that still really can be quite fraught, can't it, dealing with somebody else in that amount of distress. What do you do, we'll take you one at a time, to look after yourselves or your staff that are doing this caring? How do you keep that balance?
I'm very open, so if any of my staff have any problems, they're quite happy to come and speak with myself. But I just make sure that they're having the right time off when they should be having the right time. They're only working the hours that they should be working. Wouldn't expect anyone to take on loads of calls because I am the owner, I'm the manager, I've got a responsibility to take, and I wouldn't be putting calls on my carers when I know that I'm here and I can take that pressure off of them. So obviously that's what I do to help look after my carers. Myself, well, can be a little bit challenging because I don't have a lot of time to myself majority of the time. But when I do have 5 minutes and I'm in the house on my own, I do like to do my breathing exercises, my Wim Hof exercises, and listen to quite chilled music while I'm doing that, and that kind of helps me. Even potting around and in the garden, doing a little bit of gardening, a little bit of mindfulness goes a long way for myself.
Okay, Yes, I can see that. It stops the old brain racing around. Yeah. What about you, Julia?
So I think it's... I completely agree. Some of the things that you... Life is messy, isn't it? And actually, there's some horrible things that crop up. And actually, from a HR point of view, you kind of see all of those things when dealing with businesses. And actually, some of those things are really hard. From my point of view with my team, it's around making sure that they're not on their own. And actually, it's the opportunity to talk situations through, to be fully supported in managing difficult cases. We're also trained mental health first aiders, so actually we've got a good understanding ourselves of mental health and providing that support. But that's also then something we can provide with our clients as well, where we effectively become their in-house HR people. So whether that's working with managers, whether that's offering that support to employees. So, and I think it's also just down to little things like... Don't do as I say, do as I say, about having holiday, making sure that people aren't working excessively and having the time off. And just trying to look after themselves. And that's that encouragement to do that and making sure it's happening. But yeah, it's not an easy one. And it's definitely something that I want to improve on in terms of the support that I give my team around, whether that's private medical health, you know, health insurance and things like that. So improving the benefits that we can offer to the sports team. But yeah, lots that can be done.
I suppose one of the things that I've just had a sort of idea go through my head is to perhaps, and this is going to sound really cold actually, but I'd welcome your view as to whether you think this is actually sort of the correct approach, especially when you're dealing with somebody who... So it could be we're in a situation as a business owner where we're having to let somebody go. It could be because they are not doing their job correctly, or it could be just because we no longer have the capacity to keep them. You as an HR person are quite likely to come across those similar situations in supporting a business with redundancies and with disciplines for employees. And I'm thinking, you know, that the first thing that you need to do is to actually detach from the situation, that you don't actually have responsibility for it and that person and how they react. The second is that you need to have a way of referring them to the correct support network, that you cannot become that support network. That you have to have those resources in place already where you know, and it could be that that's an external resource, it could be that there's something like Mind, it could be that there's a you know, that you can refer them to medical support or mental wellness support or something where, or it could be, you know, if you're having to let somebody go for disciplinary, you say actually, well, here we go, here's somewhere where Definitely. You may be able to you know, get some financial help, get this, that or the other, and mental wellness. So you're detaching yourself, you're dropping down, you're letting go of the responsibility that you may think you've got, and then going, and here's somewhere that can help you. So you've sort of done the best that you can for everybody, but you can't go downhill with them, can you?
No, I learned really early on in my career. I remember doing like an absence management case, probably right at the start of my career. I used to get really upset about it, and I took it really personally. And
can we just absence management? So somebody who is off sick a lot, or yes. isn't turning up a lot,
yes.
Isn't showing up, and yep. that could be because they have something really difficult happening at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, okay.
All of those things. And it's you know, to actually take someone through a formal process if they're regularly off sick or they're not performing is actually hard and feels quite harsh as well. But yeah, you do, and it does sound a bit cold, but you do have to detach. Otherwise, you just absorb everybody's problems, and actually that's not good for your own well-being either. But there's ways you can do it. And there's ways that you can treat people, and it's very much kind of, you know, treat them how you would like to be treated, and actually just treat them as a human being. That by offering those, you know, you might be disciplining or sacking someone, but there's still support that is available to them. You know, they're not bad.
Well, they might be.
I'm just going to stop myself there. Sometimes they might be, but generally, you know, it's not always people's fault. Particularly things like redundancies or where there's performance management issues.
And sometimes it's the best thing that can happen, isn't it? It may not feel like it at the time to that person, but, you know, if they're not doing a good job, if they're not being, if they're not doing what they need to do in the business, in your business, and you know they're underperforming and they're moaning or whatever it is that they're doing, sometimes actually drawing that line under it could be the right thing to do, even if it initially plunges them into something horrible.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that they're bad at what they're doing necessarily. It just might not be the right role and a mismatch. And actually, sometimes you need to just have that tough conversation of this isn't right for you.
And when you do have that tough conversation, they're going to say, oh, I'm so glad you brought it up because I don't like this job, but I didn't have to tell you. And sometimes, actually, from my experience of a line manager and dealing with those, or from a HR partner, that's probably the majority. They just didn't know how to say, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm struggling. Or actually, something's happening at home. Or actually, I'm not very well, but I didn't want to share it. So, yeah, sometimes I always used to say, people don't come to work to do a bad job. So let's have a conversation and explore why you think that they're not up for the job. And when you get underneath it, like you said, sometimes it's they say, I want to get out. Then you can have a conversation about a graceful exit or just change of a job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but it's having that. But as a line manager or HR, you've got to have that. You've got to be the one to have that brave conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things that I always found challenging, and so I don't do it anymore, is keeping people motivated. You know, so very often I prefer to work with freelancers because their motivation is being paid. But also, if they're no longer motivated in the job, if they're finding it boring, but you don't have anything else for them to do, then it's a lot easier to sort of make that decision. Whereas when you sort of, when you're employing somebody, they want growth, and they may well be looking for that growth within your organisation. Well, if you don't have that growth opportunity, or if they're not right for that growth, I just found it so frustrating to be trying to do that. So I don't do it anymore.
That's that contractor versus employee, isn't it? Discussion that you need to have with yourself and
so I just I just don't do it. I am not very good at motivating employees. I'm just not. You just have to do. I just do the job. So I think also it's about knowing where you draw that line and what you're good at.
Definitely. And actually, typically people don't go into a career to be a manager or to be a leader. They go in because they love doing what they do.
They love doing the do.
They love it. And actually, you add people into the mix and management into the mix. It's just, it's a pain. It's hard work.
I promote you to incompetence. So I worked in banking, so you're the fastest one at writing the checks and doing the checks, so therefore I'm going to make you the manager.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then you wonder what happened.
Yeah.
You know,
and it takes them away from doing what they love. Yeah. And actually, that's kind of where we can really help out, because we can help give them that time back so they can focus on doing the things that they love. But yeah, just because you're good at what you do doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a great manager.
No.
Unfortunately.
No, I think motivation is a real challenge. And I think also when you're in business, and I think is making the mistake of expecting that other people that are working with you, for you, are going to be as motivated as you. Of course they're not.
No. They're not.
No, they're not. It's my business. I have the biggest motivation. But let's get back on track here with Natalie. So, you are a very busy person, aren't you, Natalie? You've got a lot to do. You're setting up your own business. You're working with, I think, sort of very challenging clients in some difficult situations. So, have you got a top tip, something that you use yourself to keep you productive?
Not really, to be honest with you, because I just love absolutely everything that I do, because it's just one of my passions that I've always
perhaps
had.
Perhaps that is your top tip then, actually.
Perhaps
to make sure that you're doing something you love.
I've got to like be helping people. That's just who I am naturally. I've always been the one to be the one that's the support person with friends, family, clients, anyone really. Even if I'm in a shop and I see someone struggling, I can't help but to stop and help.
How are you going to balance that, or how do you balance that with actually having what must be some really robust practices and procedures and risk assessments, because you've got workers at risk of hurting themselves, manual handling, potentially being hit, abusive, being abused. You've got vulnerable clients who could be dropped or whatever else. And how do you balance that and bring sort of that alongside your passion, your love for helping people in that situation?
Well, obviously, risk assessments are done all the time, continuously. The care plans are there all the time, so we can see if anyone's in any danger at all. We have to work alongside CQC, which is the Care Quality Commission.
Right, OK.
So they have expectations as to how we need to run the company. And we have to have certain things in place in order for us to effectively run the company.
I think that's actually quite useful, though, isn't it? Because it gives you this sort of framework that sort of keeps you on track.
Yeah, it does. But then you get your registration with CQC, you do, which is absolutely amazing. It took me a whole year to prep to, because you have to have an interview with an inspector.
Did you allow that amount of time, or did it take a lot longer than you thought?
The business plan took a lot longer than I thought.
Okay. Why did you have to do a business plan?
Yes.
as part of this process? So it wasn't just that you were okay or that they felt safe, that you were competent to deliver the care.
No.
You actually have to have had a business plan, like a growth plan.
Yes. Okay. This is what people don't seem to understand. They think you can just open up a care company and hooray, that's it.
Oh, I expected that you'd have to have, that you would have to be able to demonstrate competencies around delivering the care. What I am surprised about is that you have to deliver a business plan.
Yes, we have to deliver a business plan, which is very, very detailed, along with our policies and procedures.
You see, I would have expected all of that, but not the business plan.
The business plan, because we have to do our investigations with current care company providers within our local catchment area to see how much, obviously, they're charging their clients, to see how many clients and workers that they have, because...
What do you do? Ring them up and go, hiya, so how much do you charge and how many clients have you got? And they go, well, I'll tell you what, you can sling your hook.
Some companies are not obviously willing to tell you their prices. So you kind of have to make up a story that you've got your nan that needs looking after to obtain this information. Because
that's ridiculous.
I am a competitor. So, yes, we have to get that information. So we have to prove to CQC that although we've got these other care providers in our area, we're still able, we know their prices, this is going to be kind of our prices, and we're able to deliver that. We just have
I'm not quite sure what that has to do. What does the CQC do again?
Their Quality Care Commission. So they investigate the care providers to see whether we're delivering a good service and effective care.
It's a business, so you still got to have cash flow, because if your business plan's not there, you get all these people and then they become vulnerable
you're not sustainable. If you are too cheap in the area, potentially you're once again not charging enough to continue delivering that care.
That's correct, because what people don't understand is the things that we have to pay out for as a care provider. We have to pay out the softwares that we use, obviously, for our companies to be able to run effectively. We have to pay...
So you can't just... I'm not being facetious here. You can't just use a spreadsheet. Is there specific software that you have to provide?
Not as such, but because I'm a new care provider, I came across this new software. So this software is good in the sense that I don't have to, if I want to employ a registered manager, I don't have to, because this software does absolutely everything for me. It gives me everything that I need.
So there are certain things that the Care Quality Commission require you to monitor and deliver reports on. And one of the, so you can either have a spreadsheet and reports and do it that way, or you can actually pay for some software. So you've got to pay for it somewhere along the line.
Yeah, so this software works alongside with CQC.
Got you.
It does.
Okay.
So you're meeting everything.
Standard.
I think it's fair to say that there is an awful lot involved when you start bringing in these other sort of, when you go into that level of care. I think it's a fascinating discussion. I think it's a real heads up to actually sort of how you move through that process of turning something that you just love doing and love working with people into a viable business. So I tell you what, really seriously, hats off to you. You're there. So well done. What I want to do now is very quickly ask, what is your top tip for running a care business?
Just believing in yourself more than anything.
You see, now we're going to have trouble, aren't we? Because the next question is, what do you know now that you wish you'd have known when you started out?
That I can actually achieve something that I want to achieve. This has always been my dream, and I need to actually, like, going back to the last question, I need to believe myself in a bit more, because I've done it now. I've achieved what I wanted to achieve, but now it's now generating that client base more than anything. So,
So you're on your way. Julia, can I just bring you in? Sort of, you know, set up your own HR company, gone from HR in local government into setting your own company up. What do you know now that you wish you'd have known when you started out?
That actually, I think when I started, there was an element of doubt, actually, of, well, am I going to be able to, do I know my stuff? And even though I've been in HR for a long time, there was still, I'd been in more kind of strategic roles and actually not doing the doing. So there was a little bit of a, oh, how am I actually going to do this? And a big part of running your business is just, you just have to wing it a little bit.
You just have to wing it. I just want to Natalie. Natalie, how do people get hold of you if they're interested in finding out more about your business?
So they can contact me on various things. Mobile number. See, I'm getting my words mixed up now. Landline number, which is 01634 510 380, or you can email us at info@dignity-homecare.co.uk. We do have a website as well, which is www.dignity-homecare.co.uk. But you can also find us on Facebook and LinkedIn if you just type in Medway or see Dignity Home Care.
Brilliant. Thank you. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I did actually. What would I know now? You know, wish I'd know now. Just listening to you ladies speak is, when you do look at your competitors, look at it with a consultancy view and not you as a person, because then you'll go, is it me or self-confidence? So I say this all, I wish I'd done that, because when I was looking at my competitor and the analysis, I was like, oh, am I good enough? Am I good? I'm like, well, I don't know. Don't look at it like that. Always do your research and review your competitors as if you've paid yourself as a consultant, all right? Take the emotion out of it, otherwise you'd never get off the starting blocks.
Can I just add one thing? The one thing that I've completely forgot that I wish I did know before I started the company up was a framework. I wasn't aware that there was a framework within the council. So the framework is only open every 4 years. The framework is currently closed. So me trying to get the word out for people to understand the company.
Let me just explain very quickly. Yeah. The framework is something that local authorities run for people like who run care homes. And it's basically, it's the framework that goes out to potentially people that will refer people to your business. So it's in doctors, hospitals, that sort of thing, where you're on that list so that you can be referred to. So I'm not, we've only got literally a few seconds left, and I'm not sure how you could have overcome that.
I wouldn't have known anything about that, to be honest with you.
It's just I tell you what, I think the lesson there for everybody is just to expect the unexpected. Something is going to come in that is potentially going to knock you sideways, and you just have to say, I tell you what, okay, how do I get around this? And let's just keep going. So thank you so much for being in the studio with us, Julia Crawford of People Pillar. Thank you so much for being our guest, Natalie Banks of Dignity Home Care Medway. And Adele Martin, lovely to have you back in the studio with us. I'm Sean Murphy. This is the Women in Business Radio Show, and we will be back with you, it's next week,
next
isn't
episode.
It? We will see you very shortly.
Tune in next week to the Women in Business Radio Show for more stories, ideas, and inspiration to help you grow your business.